If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
Welcome back to On the Case, the podcast. I'm Paula Zahn, and thanks for joining us for Pod 43. Where is Mia? Tonight, we're on the case in Orlando, Florida. The city known for making children's dreams come true became the backdrop for a terrifying nightmare when Mia Marcano simply vanished. As her family rallied together, hoping to find the teenager, they knew that each passing moment could be the difference between life and death. But they never imagined they would become witnesses and ultimately help solve the crime. September 24th, 2021, began like so many other days in the life of Ema Scarbrielle. She and her 19-year-old daughter, Mia, exchanged text messages and a phone call. Even going away to school at Valencia College in Orlando had no impact on their tight bond. Mia was always in close contact with her family members. Mia's mother, Ema Scarbrielle.
Mia doesn't go a day or hour without talking to somebody in the family, whether it's me, her dad, her brother, her cousins, her friends.
Ema will never forget just how excited her daughter was when they spoke that Friday morning.
She called me at 8 o'clock. She's like, "Mom, I'm TikTok famous." The night before, she did TikTok, and she had like 1,000 likes or views on a little dance that she did.
Mia and her cousin Kaylee were also chatting and messaging that morning. They were thrilled they were going to see each other in person over the weekend. Mia was scheduled to fly home to Fort Lauderdale for a visit with her father and extended family. Mia's cousin, Kaylee Sue.
Throughout the day, I had been sending her like pictures and videos on Snapchat, telling her about my day.
But shortly after Mia finished work at the apartment complex's management office, she suddenly went silent.
I did message her after 5 when she should have been off of work, and she didn't open my Snapchat.
Her mother had also been waiting to hear from her. They were supposed to speak before Mia got on her plane.
She said, "Mom, don't forget that I'm flying to Dad tonight." And I said, "Okay, don't forget to call me."
Mia's brother, Marlon Jr., was one of the first to become worried. The two of them weren't just siblings. They were best friends.
We talked every day, whether if it was just a joke or, like, if she's upset, she'll call me. Like, if I just want to call and bother her, like, I'll call her. No matter what time of the day it was, I'll call her. She'll call me.
It wasn't like his sister to not answer his texts or calls.
She finished work at 5. I'd probably say around 6 o'clock, and I couldn't get in touch with her. I thought her phone was just dead. 6:30, I still can't find her.
Marlon had grown a bit concerned and called their mother.
My son called and was like, "Mom, we can't find Mia." I was like, "What do you mean you can't find Mia?" He's like, "She's not answering her phone."
In fact, Mia wasn't on social media or returning text messages either. By 6:45, her family was becoming alarmed.
My aunt called me and asked me if I had spoken to Mia. I said, "No, let me check her location."
Kaylee then used an app that allowed her to track the GPS coordinates in Mia's phone.
I always had her location since she moved to Orlando, and when I went to look at her location, it said no location found. I said, her phone is definitely off. My aunt said to me, something is wrong.
Kaylee was worried, but she was trying to stay calm for her aunt.
I said, don't say that. I'm going to reach out to a couple of our friends and see what we can do.
Kaylee began calling Mia's school friends to see if they had any information on what was happening. They said that Mia had a ticket for an 8:50 flight that night. But no one had heard from her since a little after 5 p.m. She asked one of the friends to go by Mia's apartment to check to see if she was there.
She did go back, and then at that point, she confirmed that her room was dark, that like there were no lights on or anything in her room. So at that point, I was thinking, well, maybe she headed to the airport or something.
Kaylee reported everything she learned to Mia's mother, but the new information did little to calm her nerves.
She was in contact with her friends via text. She was telling them that she's going to the airport. Right after that, her friend asked her what time, and she never replied.
Mia's mother knew the lack of response was completely out of character for her daughter, but she tried not to panic.
As a parent, you want to remain positive. You don't want to think that something's wrong with any one of your kids. I said, you know, I'm going to call Uber. I'm going to call Lyft. And I called the airline.
None of the companies had any information on Mia. Still, Ima and family members at the airport hoped that they would soon have a simple explanation.
I'm still being hopeful that she's on that flight and something's wrong with her phone.
But as the sea of passengers came out of the gate, Mia wasn't among them.
When her grandmother called and said that she's not on that plane, that's where I think my soul shattered.
It was hours that we didn't hear from her. That's not like my sister.
I called the police and tell them there's something wrong. I can't find her.
As Ima spoke with police in Orlando to report Mia missing, she felt helpless. She was still 1,100 miles away in St. Thomas.
If I could have blinked my eyes and ended up by her apartment, I would have, because I needed to be there.
Ima took comfort in the fact that the rest of Mia's loved ones were on their way from Fort Lauderdale to her apartment.
We started to come up with our plan. Who's going to Orlando? Whose cars are going? And then I also made the first initial post.
Kaylee posted a missing persons flyer on social media, hoping that someone knew where her cousin was.
So I just kept it pretty simple. Please help us find Mia, with the picture of her and her age, her weight, her height.
Three cars filled with the teenager's relatives raced towards Orlando. They were terrified by what they'd find when they arrived.
Our car was almost completely silent. I don't think that anyone knew what to say, what to think. I have a friend that was out at a bar. He called me and he was like, what is going on? I have friends in Orlando. What do you need me to do? And I just said, I don't really know. We're on our way up there now and we'll figure it out when we get there.
At the same time, police had begun an investigation into Mia's disappearance. The first officer arrived at her ground floor apartment at 10:02. Just 20 minutes after her mother reported Mia missing. It appeared as if no one was home. Reporter Nicole Linsalata.
They knocked on the door. They couldn't get in. The deputy went around to the back. He looked through the window, and there didn't seem to be anything out of the ordinary.
A few minutes later, Mia's family got in touch with her roommate, who let the officer into the apartment they shared. The officer saw nothing unusual in the kitchen or living room. But the door to Mia's bedroom was locked.
According to her roommates, she sometimes would lock her own bedroom door.
Still, the deputy was concerned enough that he and Mia's roommate walked back outside for a second look through her bedroom window. This time, he noticed it wasn't locked.
The deputy had the roommate go through the window into her apartment and let them in so that they could go ahead and look.
But as soon as Mia's roommate turned on the lights, she noticed that Mia's door had been barricaded.
The small dresser is blocking the door.
Mia's roommate opened the door for the officer. When he entered, he discovered more troubling evidence.
If you look at pictures of Mia, you will always see her wearing a necklace. It was broken and on the floor. The police also found a rusty old box cutter under a rug and a small patch of dried blood on her pillowcase.
Her roommate said the box cutter didn't belong to Mia, and she had no idea how it had gotten there. The officer called back Mia's mother, and even before he mentioned those disturbing clues, Ima raised red flags about the unlocked window.
Her dad placed security locks onto her windows. Mia would never unlock her windows.
And there was another item the officer found in the bedroom that triggered Ima.
They found her teddy bear in the closet.
The teddy bear was Mia's prized possession.
Mia goes nowhere without her teddy bear. I knew right then and there something happened to her.
Teddy was a member of our family. She would even take him to work.
The evidence police found raised alarming questions. Had there been a struggle in the room? Why would someone have barricaded Mia's door and locked it from the inside? And how did they ultimately get out?
The window was the only other way out.
At 1:36 on Saturday morning, 19-year-old Mia Marcano was officially declared a missing person by the Orlando County Sheriff's Office. Just after 4 a.m., nearly a dozen members of Mia's family arrived and joined the search team.
We went into the house and we were just looking at everything, trying to put, like, make a scenario of what happened. We went to the back of the house where her window was, the area right by her window, just checking everything out.
Kaylee felt a sense of dread as she walked around the apartment. Everything seemed slightly off to her.
When I walked inside, I could see that something was wrong. Her room always looked exactly the same. Everything was put in its place and very, very neat. But her room was messy. There was like dirt tracks in the carpet.
Mia's father turned towards the bedroom window. He noticed that the locks he installed were no longer there.
He was like, no, these are completely gone.
Kaylee and Mia's father were now as certain as her mother that the teenager was in grave danger.
We tried really hard not to touch anything in her apartment because we're like, this could be a crime scene.
On the Case, the podcast will continue in a moment.
You want to believe you're safe in the heartland, and it just changed. On the Murder in the Heartland podcast from ID, we'll examine true stories that happened in a town a lot like yours.
I regret not telling the police. I knew who did it.
I wanted the person to pay for what they had done to her.
There was a sense of bloodthirst. We have to get revenge.
Listen to Murder in the Heartland, wherever you get your podcasts.
Mia's family didn't believe that police were taking the situation as seriously as they were. So they immediately began their own investigation. Mia's cousin, Kaylee Sue.
We were all like putting ourselves into that detective mode.
While it was unusual for a family to take on the role of investigators, they knew that time was against them. They desperately needed to find Mia before it was too late.
As soon as they heard that something was wrong with Mia, they were there and they were ready to go.
Mia's loved ones were convinced that she had been the victim of foul play. But none of them could think of a reason why someone would want to hurt her. The 19-year-old had no enemies. Mia's mother, Yima Scarbio.
Mia was everybody's princess. She was just exactly what you see in her pictures. Just full of life. Beautiful, beautiful girl inside and out.
She was always really, really funny. She was just very sarcastic and very dry. She was really smart.
Mia's parents had divorced when she was 6, but she remained incredibly close to both of them.
She was amazing. She never limited herself. She was the best at everything she put herself into.
As Mia got older, she gravitated towards the spotlight.
So she did cheerleading, modeling, pageantry. When she would hit the stage, she had a mission.
If she goes, okay, Mom, there's dance. Can I try dance? Let's go for it. Mom, there's cheerleading. Can I do cheerleading? Let's go for it. Modeling? Let's go for it. When she put her mind to it, she was the best at everything she put herself into.
And Mia had even bigger goals for her future. She was in college to study sports medicine.
When she started college, she took a high interest into sports medicine. She was really pursuing was sports medicine, anything to do in that field.
I was like really, really impressed. She was really smart and she really tried hard in school. Just like any other college student, it's hard to be in charge of your own schoolwork and in charge of your own life. And she was like, no, I gotta step up my game. I gotta make sure. She had a mission. She was like, I'm coming, I'm gonna do my job and I'm out of here.
Mia was thriving at Valencia College and loved being independent for the first time in her life.
She was excited for the little bit of independence that you gain when you move away from home. She knew that she wasn't going to be without us. And she's like, you know, worst case scenario, I'm only a 3-hour drive away. I can be home on a plane in an hour. So she was getting the experience of being away and being independent while also not being too far away from family.
She wasn't someone her mother ever had to worry about.
Mia was very responsible. So when she set out to go to college, I felt good about it because she's very responsible.
Now the family who loved Mia had gathered in Orlando, fearing the worst. It was 4:36 a.m., and her family was desperately trying to piece together the clues they had found in her apartment. Mia's brother, Marlon Mercano Jr.
When you barricade a door, you obviously hide something. I thought somebody took her.
Mia had multiple Apple products, so we wanted to see if we could maybe get her location.
I did get into the laptop. Her iCloud, like where you could see the last text messages.
But Kaylee and Marlon's efforts only confirmed what they already knew. Mia's electronic footprint had come to a sudden end at 5:06 p.m. on Friday, September 24th, 2021. The news was devastating. And as her loved ones began to plan their next steps, her cousin Kaylee looked out the window and saw something that caught her attention.
There's a parking lot behind her apartment, and I see a silver car pulled up, and I'm standing in the window, just kind of watching him.
When the man behind the wheel noticed Kaylee staring at him, he panicked.
And then he saw me and immediately went into reverse and hit a parked car behind him, did a three-point turn, and went around to the front of the building.
But the driver's attempt at a quick getaway actually led him to a direct confrontation with other members of Mia's family.
My cousin Simone was standing up in the front of the building, and a car almost hit her when it was the silver car.
The officer who had been in Mia's apartment joined her family in the parking lot, and the driver was forced to stop and talk with them. What he said was chilling.
He said, "Y'all looking for Mia?"
Simone was stunned. She wondered how this stranger had known Mia was missing.
She said, "Who are you?" And he said, "I'm the maintenance guy."
The answer raised more red flags. Mia had recently told loved ones there was a maintenance worker at the apartment complex who had been harassing her.
Mia had a leak in her apartment that was supposedly from the AC, and when it was being fixed, she did mention to her grandma that there was a maintenance man that she felt was kind of creepy, so she didn't want him in her apartment, so she didn't really feel comfortable with calling it in or looking into it.
Something inside of Kaylee told her that she needed to document what the man was saying.
I immediately started recording everything, all of our interactions.
The man's presence raised a lot of questions. Not only did he know that Mia was missing, but no one could understand why he had shown up at the apartment complex in the middle of the night, especially since he wasn't scheduled to work.
We all thought that it was strange. We had a lot of questions about, how did you know that she was missing and why are you here now?
The maintenance man claimed a mutual friend named Tati had told him that Mia was missing. Mia's loved ones knew all of her friends, and the name Tati had never been mentioned.
You keep mentioning Tati.
You live 20 minutes away from here, and you get a call all of a sudden.
The roommates don't even know Tati.
All of a sudden, you're showing up here at 4 o'clock in the morning looking for
Mia. Tati were conversating about it, so I finally, it came
up. Okay,
but Tati is
someone.
Should I go and see if I see anything?
Then Simone turned up the pressure. She accused him of being the man Mia had complained about.
As of right now, you have sent obsessive texts to Mia. You're fascinated with Mia. Obviously, she's missing. So we're talking to you.
As Kaylee videotaped the confrontation, she focused on the man's body language. It seemed at odds with his claim that he had come to offer help.
When we initially started speaking to him, he was already defensive. He was getting agitated.
And she also made troubling observations about the man's appearance.
His face was swollen and his hand. So we were all like, where did that come from?
As the dramatic scene continued, Mia's mother listened in through the phone of another family member.
Something about him spoke volumes, that he has something to do with Mia's disappearance. We just knew that he was lying.
After the barrage of questions from Mia's family, the police officer asked the maintenance worker for basic information.
They talked to him, got his address. They had nothing to really act upon at that moment.
But the conversation actually gave Mia's family enough to move forward with their own investigation. They jotted down the maintenance worker's name, Armando Caballero, and they got his address. They were convinced Caballero was responsible for Mia's disappearance. But they also knew they had to focus on finding the 19-year-old. More on The Case, the podcast, after this. As the sun rose over Orlando, it had been 13 hours since anyone had heard from Mia. Mia's cousin, Kaylee Sue.
We couldn't just sit there and do nothing. We have to print flyers. We need to go to areas that we know that she would have gone to.
While dozens of Mia's loved ones and friends took on the job of covering the city in flyers, the investigative team within the family plotted out its next move.
We knew that we needed to divide and conquer.
And that meant paying Armando Caballero another visit.
I wanted to go and drive past where he lived. I knew that he knew something.
She never considered her own safety and the potential ramifications of showing up at his apartment unannounced.
I had tunnel vision. I'm here with a goal and that's it. It didn't matter that something could happen to me because my goal was to find my little cousin.
And Kaylee hoped that keeping a close eye on Caballero would lead them straight to Mia. By 8 a.m., the family's undercover unit was in place.
When we pulled in, he was actually standing outside of his car. He was going back and forth, like, looking through it. So it's four women in the car. All of us were like, because I was not expecting to see this man outside.
Kaylee once again took out her phone to surreptitiously videotape Caballero.
He started going through his car and taking things out of his car, and I started recording him again.
Almost immediately, Kaylee's camera captured a terrifying clue.
When he took out the gloves is when I really started to feel worried.
He has gloves.
And the gloves weren't the kind that you would typically see a maintenance worker wearing.
Like ones that you'd see in the hospital, and then quickly after that, he pulled out the blanket.
That is my blanket.
Mia's grandmother was certain that the blanket Caballero was holding was a gift that she had given to Mia.
The blanket had a pattern on it. And that's what was distinctive to her. She had bought a few of them at the same time, and they all had different patterns. And once she mentioned that, I knew of the other blankets that she bought at that time because Mia would take them on little, like, road trips and things like that. Or if we're going on a trip, like, on a plane or whatever. It was just, like, a little throw. But she knew the blanket, and she knew that Mia had it. So that's how it was, like, very distinctive to her.
Mia's family watched in horror as he pulled the blanket out of his car and took it inside his apartment.
Everyone was kind of like really, really loud in the car, and we're trying to keep everyone calm at the same time. Of course, I know the emotions were very high.
Everyone became convinced that there could only be one reason he had Mia's blanket.
It was confirmation for me, like, okay, yes, he's involved. He does have Mia.
Oh my God, call the police, call the police.
reporter Nicole Linsalata.
What was so chilling about that video is the reaction of her family.
He has gloves in his hands.
She's missing, and here's a guy holding rubber gloves with her blanket.
The blanket.
Oh, my God, that is my blanket.
Oh my God,
call the police.
One of Mia's relatives contacted police to report what they had just seen, while another relayed the details to the rest of the family. During those calls, Caballero came back outside. All of the raised voices had gotten his attention.
While we were on the phone, I guess he had caught on to us, and he came across the street to where we were and started to circle the car.
When Caballero spoke with them, he sounded angry and threatening.
He said, get out of the car. So I just kept saying, like, don't engage, just ignore him.
Caballero then got into his car and took off. But the family stakeout wasn't over.
As he was pulling out, Marlon was pulling in, and he made a U-turn and followed Armando.
Marlon was also certain Caballero had kidnapped his sister.
The moment that they seen him with the blanket, it really just confirmed it, to be honest. You already have your thoughts, you're putting everything together. It all makes sense, but you just want that one piece that could connect the whole thing, and that was that piece.
And there was no way he was going to let Caballero get away with it. After a few miles, Mia's father and her brother managed to get the silver car to pull over. And they demanded that Caballero tell them where Mia was.
He was just playing like he didn't know anything.
For Mia's distraught loved ones, his response was infuriating. It took every ounce of restraint for them to remain level-headed.
Of course you want to do something to him, but I do something to him. He's still the only one that knows where she's at and what happened. It ain't even about what happened at that point. It's just, yo, where she's at.
Meanwhile, back at Caballero's apartment, police had arrived. Officers called him and asked him to return home. 20 minutes later, Caballero pulled back into his parking lot.
Ultimately, he gives them permission to walk through his apartment.
Caballero, an officer, and a friend of Mia's went inside. Her family wasn't sure what they would discover. They believed that Mia might be inside the apartment.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Like, potentially she could be in there, which is why I yelled for them to call the police.
But Mia was not in the apartment, and the blanket Mia's relatives had seen wasn't there either.
They did confirm that they didn't find her blanket in there. The blanket that we saw go into the apartment was not in there when they searched it.
It was disappointing, but not surprising. Caballero had clearly found a way to get it out of his apartment.
He knew we knew what was there, and he had time to get rid of it.
Mia's family was certain that during the drive to his apartment, Caballero had called one of his roommates to get rid of the blanket.
From where we were, back to their house is a good 10, 15-minute drive.
But no one would admit to helping him get rid of it. The blanket vanished, just like Mia.
No one knows what he did with it. Nobody could find it.
Despite Mia's family's videotaped evidence, police still didn't have enough probable cause to arrest or detain Caballero. He remained a free man.
I really wanted them to just take him in because he knew something.
Police agreed and turned up the pressure on Caballero. Sheriff John Mina.
Our detectives determined 27-year-old Armando Manuel Caballero, the person of interest in her disappearance.
While Mia's family had hit a dead end, the official police investigation into Caballero had begun making progress. Investigators had uncovered damning evidence against Caballero while reviewing computerized key entry data from Mia's apartment. Family attorney Daryl Washington.
That was very critical because it was discovered that at approximately 4:36 p.m., he went into the apartment.
The records seemed to confirm everything Mia's family feared. Armando Caballero, a maintenance worker at the complex, had used his master key to unlock Mia's door just 24 minutes before the teenager got home from work.
Through her key, it was discovered that Mia entered into her apartment about 5.
After she walked through her front door, Mia suddenly stopped communicating with everyone she loved. The key fob data was physical evidence that Caballero had been inside Mia's apartment at that moment.
You have to wonder, what was Mia's reaction when she walked in and she realized that this guy who had been harassing her was now standing in her apartment?
The records painted a terrifying picture of the last moments before the teenager disappeared. Once police had that information, it was enough to make an arrest.
They were going to charge him with burglary.
I don't think at that point there was any doubt to them that foul play was involved.
The burglary allegations were a way to get Caballero off the street while police built their case on more serious charges related to Mia's disappearance. But when officers went to his apartment to execute an arrest warrant, Armando Caballero had vanished. Police immediately put out an APB on their prime suspect and his silver car.
We have been actively searching for Caballero, and I want to reiterate, Mia is still missing.
On the Case, the podcast will continue in a moment. Meanwhile, Mia's family continue to uncover more terrifying details about Caballero. Mia's cousin, Kaylee Sue.
I found that he had additional criminal arrests. He had a violent criminal record.
The discovery only added to the urgency to find Caballero. By daybreak the next day, the search for Caballero was front page news, and the media attention led to a grim discovery at a building where the maintenance worker had previously been employed. Reporter Nicole Linsalata.
They got a phone call. Some maintenance people were trying to get into a storage unit.
The storage unit had been locked from the inside.
Finally, it was accessed, and they found him hanging there. He had hanged himself.
Earlier today, Armando Caballero was found dead at an apartment complex in Seminole County. It appears he has killed himself.
Police searched the storage unit, but there was no suicide note nor any other clue that would lead investigators to Mia Marcano. For her family, the news was confirmation that they had been right all along. But it also meant that Caballero had taken all of his secrets to the grave.
I honestly wasn't that surprised because I was like, this guy knows we're on to him. He's definitely guilty of something, but again, did not want to think the worst. And I was like, okay, we still need to find Mia. I think my Instagram post at that time was, okay, this is the update, but this does not take away from the fact that we are still looking for my little cousin. Please, like, continue to share and to do what you can to help us find her.
Mia's family was left with questions that would never be answered. They were angry and frustrated. Mia's mother, Yima Scarbio.
Complete defeat. I knew he hurt my child. I knew he did that. The least he could have done was told us where she was.
I was cowardly. I was selfish. He was the one person that would have answers. He took the easy way out.
For police, Caballero's suicide meant that Mia Marcano was most likely already dead.
They're searching swamps and rivers.
Still, Mia's mother and the rest of her family clung to hope.
In my mind, I'm going to spend the rest of my life searching for my daughter. We have to.
What if she's drugged? What if she needs medical attention? What if she's tied up somewhere? Those were the worst case scenarios that we were thinking.
Investigators focused their search area based on the GPS coordinates obtained from Caballero's cell phone on the night Mia disappeared.
According to the sheriff's office, his phone pings about 17 miles away from her apartment complex, a somewhat run-down area with some abandoned buildings.
On October 2nd at 10:45 a.m., police scoured the brush and weeds near those structures.
And they found her.
Mia's brother, Marlon Marcano Jr.
I can't remember which detective it was, but I think he asked me what type of tattoos did my sister have. And I told him, and he was like, well, I'm sorry to break it to you, but we found a bag with her remains.
The search for 19-year-old Mia Marcano had ended in the worst way possible.
She was wearing jeans, a bra, and a robe, and her purse was there. Her ankles, her wrists, and her mouth were all bound with black duct tape.
Based on that evidence, it appeared that Caballero had abducted Mia while she was getting ready to leave for the airport. But nearly everything else about her murder remains a mystery.
The autopsy was inconclusive. They did not believe she was sexually assaulted, and they couldn't tell how she died.
For her mother, the discovery of Mia's body was the end of a tormenting journey.
That's when my soul was completely shattered and my world would never be the same again.
Mia's family will have to deal with their pain without answers.
I was honestly just like in disbelief because that's not the outcome that anybody wanted. So I couldn't believe that that's what had happened. And I also wondered, like, when did that take place? How long was she there for? How come they didn't check there before? I had a lot of different questions on, like, what happened was really my main question.
It was just like shock. You want to feel like it's not real, if that makes sense. Like, you still don't know what happened. Like, you just want to know what happened. It's like, damn, I just lost it all in a day because I was just with her. I took her out to dinner the day before she died.
No one will ever know for sure what happened to Mia when she walked inside her apartment that late afternoon.
That's the million-dollar question. We believe that she was surprised by him. We believe there was a struggle.
Based on Caballero's phone records, police are confident that he killed Mia within hours of that initial confrontation in her apartment. It was a senseless act of violence committed by a man who seemed to have an obsession with Mia.
I think she rejected him. It appears that this was someone who couldn't take no for an answer.
Mia's family has decided to turn their devastation into action. They hope what they've learned can spare other families from a similar tragedy. They are advocates for Mia's Law, bipartisan legislation that will strengthen security measures at apartment complexes across Florida. Family attorney Daryl Washington.
We hope in that it's going to prevent someone like this individual from having that type of access to tenants. Individuals who are working there, we want to make sure that they're going through a national background screening.
The law will be just one of the ways her family honors Mia's legacy. But their hard work and amazing achievements will never fill the hole in their hearts.
It really showed everybody to appreciate everything that they have while they're still here.
A lot of people do ask me all the time, like, how do you process this? And I'm like, I don't know. I just don't know.
Mia's brother thinks about his sister every single day.
I just think about all the jokes we did, like, all the stuff we used to do, like, talk about music we used to listen to, all the times we had, like, things I'll never be able to live again, but things I could always revisit whenever I feel like it.
Her mother will never forgive the man who took away her loving daughter.
He forever changed our lives. I'm forever stuck on September 24th. Mia was 19. She had her whole life ahead of her. And people say time heals wounds. It really doesn't. Mia is everywhere for me. She's the air we breathe.
In late June of 2022, Governor Ron DeSantis signed Mia's Law. The law now requires landlords to run background checks on all of their employees, screening for things like past violent offenses. They also need to give a tenant 24 hours notice before entering their apartment for maintenance or repair. Thanks for listening. Please don't forget to follow, rate, and review. And if you want more information on today's case, visit facebook.com/paulazanofficial. Or just click the link in the episode description. I'm Paula Zahn. Please join us again next Wednesday when we're back on the case, the podcast.